Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia, and it is the 19th of February 2014. It is a great pleasure to have you on board with us today. Today's show is going to be a one-hour show. I don't have a second hour guest lined up for this week, but I do for next week's show. Next week, I'm actually bringing on a very important guest to talk about climate change. He's been on the show before. His name is Bob Carter, former professor at James Cook University in Queensland, and that is going to be an extremely interesting chat. That'll be in a week's time. But in today's show, we are going to cover, once again, the Chappelle Corby case, the latest developments in that case. And ladies and gentlemen, there have been some really quite disturbing developments which further underline the observations that I've been making for quite some time, that the Corby case is really a political case, that Chappelle Corby is in reality a political prisoner. But of course, in this modern world of redefinitions of meaning, of doublethink, of a continual sort of moving of goalposts in terms of what anything really is, we don't often see it very clearly. We get an impression from the media, but then when you look at all of the statements that you get from the media and you put them together, you find that indeed this does actually look like a political case rather than a case of a drug offender who was locked up for a number of years and is now released. The furore surrounding Chappelle Corby after her release is comparable to what happened when she was originally arrested. And all this time has gone by. And the reason for that, folks, is because the questions about her guilt or innocence have never been resolved. But during that time that she was incarcerated, other information surfaced which was extremely disturbing and went to the core of some of the most serious problems we have in Australian society and globally as well, but with a particular focus on Australia because this is an Australian issue, in terms of the corruption of our police, of our border control systems, and of the highest levels of government. Now, the latest development in the Chappelle Corby case just further underlines what I'm saying in a most extraordinary way. The police have raided Channel 7 over the impending Chappelle Corby interview, which was had been scheduled to take place last week and had been delayed after some disquieting comments from the Indonesian authorities. The Australian Federal Police on the 18th of February raided the offices of Channel 7, allegedly because they were trying to find information in relation to potential offences against the Proceeds of Crime Act. However, the Federal Police are one of the nominated conspirators in the unfolding saga of corruption and smuggling involving airports, baggage handlers, and customs officials. The AFP have been implicated in that. High-level members within that organization and other crime-fighting organizations in New South Wales are certainly implicated in the cover-up of the true level of corruption that has been endemic in our airports for a very, very long time. Now, when we see the Federal Police moving in a fascist kind of way, in a jackbooted kind of way, to break down the doors of offices pertaining to the media, what does that sound like? That sounds like political, doesn't it? That sounds like political oppression. And everyone just doesn't seem to get it, because the popular mindset when people talk about Chappelle Corby, which has been so heavily influenced by the brainwashing of the media is, oh, you know, she's just this druggie, and, you know, a lot of people say, oh, let it go, she's done her time, or other people say, oh, marijuana shouldn't be illegal, you know, I don't care if she brought marijuana to Bali, and of course they all miss the point. They've all gone off on, they've actually been led, they've been herded into this faux debate, into this sidetrack distraction, when the real game is over here on the other side, which is the issue about the deep endemic corruption, its links to the highest level of government. And this raid on the offices of Channel 7 by possibly the culprits themselves is just incredibly ironic. It's incredibly in plain sight when we see the criminals and the corrupt entities possibly behind Chappelle's mistrial and travesty of justice, when we see them now acting to suppress the media. It just boggles the mind, ladies and gentlemen. It just blows my mind. And there's very little discussion of it, because I think there's very little understanding even of what is going on here. And I am certainly not holding Channel 7 up as some great bastion of free speech. And there's deeper questions and deeper ironies here, because Channel 7, of course, had been one of the main culprits in the attacks against Chappelle, which actually led to her unjust trial and incarceration. Of course, it was Channel 7 that led with that incredibly damaging series of primetime current affairs news reports that featured her former friend Jody Power claiming that Chappelle and her family were all involved in drugs, that they consumed marijuana, and that they were involved in selling it, and that she'd been asked if she would actually take marijuana to Bali, and all these claims, which were subsequently proven in the Supreme Court in a very, very lengthy and protracted trial to be completely false, completely without foundation. So there's a lot more to find out here. There's a lot deeper puzzles to solve here as to why it is now Channel 7 is kind of being the champion of Chappelle Corby's free speech. But all I can tell you is that what we see now, what we are seeing, is classic oppression. It is classic political oppression. If it looks like a duck, it talks like a duck, it quacks like a duck. That's what it is, folks. She's a political prisoner. She's got information which is incredibly damaging to the status quo. Now, let me play to you here a clip that was recorded from 2UE Radio on the 14th of February. And this actually features one of the executives from Channel 7 speaking here with a very hoarse voice. Not a particularly good recording, but try and just listen to this for the content that you will be getting, and the level of perplexity that you can feel coming from this guy at Channel 7. Whether it's genuine or not, I don't know.
Oh, early this morning, about 20 or more federal policemen converged on Channel 7's Pyrmont head office.
You're right. Do you need a cough? Go ahead. That's all right.
They converged on our Pyrmont office.
Yep.
They also raided Pacific Magazines and New Idea.
Bruce, if you need a glass of water, that's fine. It's not a problem. You must have done a lot of talking today. Yep. I can well imagine.
Take
your time. That's all right.
Okay.
No worries. Okay. So they're at your Pyrmont office.
Yeah, they came to the Pyrmont office and marched in and started demanding things.
Yeah.
We obviously were annoyed that they did it and disappointed, because they sought material last week, and we thought we had given to them all the material they wanted.
All right.
Correspondence with our lawyers.
Okay, so sorry, just to be clear, last week the AFP had asked you for details
for certain documents
what did they ask for?
Well, essentially they're trying to see if an agreement's been reached to pay Schapelle Corby money.
Yep.
Which is out under the Proceeds of Crime Act.
All right, understand. Okay, and what? You're a little amazed that they have turned up to the office today to...
Well, not only our office, but also they tried to go to our news office, and they also went out to Pacific Magazines at Redfern.
Yeah, all right.
So we think it's complete overreaction, given our lawyers have given them everything, and where they've asked for further material, they've provided it to them promptly, and fulsomely. So, you know, they have got some feeling that there's some massive amount of money not being disclosed, and that's not the case, and we've told them that's not the case, but they don't believe us, and so they feel they can just execute a raid.
Look, it did seem a little full on today. I heard that a representative of Channel 7 was saying to the AFP, look, just hold on, wait for our lawyers. I mean, it seemed like an incredibly intense situation.
Yes.
All right. Now, Bruce, let's clear up a couple of things then. Have you paid any money to Schapelle Corby, the Corby family, or any party acting on behalf of them?
Justin, we haven't paid money to them, and that's I think, what is perplexing.
All right. So,
federal police.
Sure. So just on that question, any party representing the Corby family or the family, have you paid them any money at all?
No, we haven't. And look, I'm not sounding defensive about
this.
Right. Obviously, everyone, all media, has been negotiating to get an interview.
Yep.
The fact is, there is no concluded agreement yet,
if
you know what I mean. Now, unfortunately, the AFP doesn't think we're telling the truth when we tell them that. Clearly, Schapelle is in a facility with our journalists, and they're trying to interview her.
Are you paying for that?
Of course we're paying for that.
Yeah, okay. Would that be considered, I'm just thinking out loud here, forgive me, but would that be considered to be paying the family in some way?
I don't know, to tell you the truth. And obviously we've given them all the hotel invoices and things like that so that they can work that
okay,
out.
Okay, so the AFP...
But that's, we're talking... there like a couple of $1,000. We're not talking $3 million like is being bandied around.
Okay, I'll just leave it there. I think there's a few points that I really do need to highlight here in this whole situation. Firstly, when Proceeds of Crime Act is invoked, it is in my understanding, it is invoked after someone has received money as a result of some sort of a media royalties, well, it could be a book or it could be a film, that exploited some information about that person that was connected to their criminal activity. But this is a really, really important point to emphasise, is that this is not done preventatively. It is not a crime prevention measure that I've ever heard of, that the police would come in and intervene to prevent such a situation transpiring.
Getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
Thank you.
welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And I'm talking here today about the latest developments in the Schapelle Corby case. Schapelle Corby, for those are listening overseas, again, who haven't been following our show, Schapelle Corby, Australian, a young woman, beauty student from the Gold Coast in Queensland, went to Bali for a holiday in 2004, got to the airport at the other end and put her bag down on the counter, and the customs found 4 kilograms of marijuana. She said, "It's not mine." They arrested her. She said, "It's not mine," and she continued to say that. She continued to deny any involvement. She protested her innocence relentlessly, has never admitted guilt, and was never forensically linked to the drugs, and there were no forensic investigations that were ever done, and that includes things like fingerprints, analysis of the substance, where it came from, its provenance, that kind of thing, photographic information, video footage showing her carrying the bag, or indeed any links with drug trafficking, either in Australia or in Indonesia. She was completely unknown to the police, and there was no larger investigation, and there were no other arrests other than Schapelle herself, who had been travelling with family and friends. And, of course, you don't carry coals to Newcastle. It doesn't provide a very good way of making money, because the value of that substance is worth 10 to 100 times less in the country in which she arrived. Meanwhile, over the years after she was convicted and locked up, many, many stories began to surface. A lot of information came forth that proved that there was a network of corrupt baggage handlers operating all around Australia, and that they were moving bags around via the airports packed with drugs. The baggage handlers would simply open the bag at one end. They would just select a bag at random, one that looked like it might have a bit of space in it. They would chuck a sealed plastic-wrapped bag of drugs, marijuana, heroin, whatever it might be, put it in the suitcase at one end, and another corrupt baggage handler would pull it out at the other end. So all that information had been leaking out, ladies and gentlemen, and information connected those corrupt baggage handlers to corrupt police, and also to corrupt customs officers, and the chain of corruption goes up and up and up, higher and higher. But the Australian government never assisted Schapelle in her defence, and her defence was that she didn't bring the drugs, and that therefore, and it was really a deductive reasoning, it must have been someone in the airports who put it there, because it was out of her control for a very large part of her itinerary, because she travelled from Brisbane in Queensland to, via Sydney to Denpasar, Bali. And that involves one stop in Sydney, and that is most likely where the drugs should have been removed by the corrupt baggage handlers if they had been placed in her bag in Brisbane, as was very common. As we know, they were doing that on a regular basis. They were moving drugs between Brisbane and Sydney. So, just getting back now to the current situation, after 9 years in prison and 9 years of basically being largely forgotten, and not receiving any support from her government, even though there were startling pieces of information that came forward, such as the fact that her boogie board, a bag which allegedly contained drugs, was mysteriously not scanned when it went through the airport, and that's been proven in leaked documents. Despite all this, no support from the government. But there is a growing vast underground movement of support for Schapelle. We have anonymous researchers all over the world who converged together to create a website called The Expendable Project, which collected all this information. And the information is incredibly damning, incredibly, incredibly dangerous to the powers that be. Now, we all knew that, you know, when Chappelle was finally released, we knew that there was going to be a day of judgment. There was going to be a new interest in this case, which would then see all this information come to the surface, and who knows, perhaps more information might come to the surface. And I've always wondered, well, what will happen? Because we know that the authorities, we know that they are all steeped in lies and corruption and deceit and criminality. And we know that they've been keeping this lady locked up because it is inconvenient for them, for her to be running around saying she's innocent. Because it just gets people thinking again, doesn't it? So the sentence reduction that she received from the Indonesian justice system was a little bit of a surprise because, you see, she never pleaded guilty. She never showed contrition. Normally, in order to get a major sentence reduction as she did, which was a 5-year sentence reduction, you would need to show contrition. If you don't admit that you did it, that is not contrition, folks. That is very much the opposite of contrition. And there's been speculation, and I've considered the possibility, that the Indonesians did this deliberately to release her back because, as we all know, there is a massive diplomatic row brewing between Australia and Indonesia. And I'm going to continue talking about that in the second half hour of the first hour today, because the latest information that has come through about the Australian spying scandal, it just gets worse and worse and worse. Our treatment of our nearest neighbour, Indonesia, is appalling, folks. And they have really lost their patience with us. We are on the verge of complete diplomatic freeze-out with Indonesia. We are, you know, and that is the first stage in a state of war. We could end up in a state of war with Indonesia. This could be the beginning of something that changes the whole face of Australia. This little issue that we're seeing now with these, what seem to be two totally unrelated topics of this woman who was locked up for 9 years, protesting her innocence, connected to some government cover-up of a horrendous drug smuggling operation, and the highly criminal activity of spying on your neighbours for political gain in trade negotiations. This makes Australia look like a morally reprehensible country, a country that that really one would put in the state of a rogue nation. One would call this a rogue nation. If, as the Indonesians are now aware, that there was this this incredibly elaborate smuggling operation that the government has just willfully covered up and sacrificed a citizen over, and now it's exposed that the government is with partners in the NSA in the United States is spying on their trade negotiators to get an advantageous position in trade negotiations. Really, we are looking like quite an evil country, quite an evil government at the very least. So it is conceivable that the Indonesians released Chappelle knowing the damage she could do. And this question of the damage that she could do is now further highlighted by this incredibly fascist, thuggish, knee-jerk reaction from the Australian Federal Police in smashing down the doors of a news broadcaster, supposedly in relation to the Proceeds of Crime Act, when in fact there haven't been any proceeds paid, and that's admitted now, and you heard that on the interview. So what is it? It's a pre-crime raid. Is it? Pre-crime. We're now involved in pre-crime just to prevent this criminal getting paid. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. We are today going through some news in relation to Chappelle Corby and also Australia's relations with Indonesia. And as I promised at the end of the last segment, I'm now going to bring you another story that is somewhat interconnected with Chappelle, although you won't see that acknowledged, but the timing is quite extraordinary. And what I've noticed is that as the spying scandal between Australia and Indonesia has unfolded, so have the new developments with the Chappelle Corby case, with the final approval of her parole, and the Indonesians more or less allowing her to return to the general community. And we are now seeing Chappelle on the verge of doing an interview. At the same time as this, Australian relations with Indonesia have sunk to an abysmal level, to a new low, really verging on a state of cold war now. And this is what leads me to believe that there may be some actual connection between the Corby case and this development, in that the Indonesians are somewhat throwing Chappelle Corby back into the arena. And I've got more news on that, which has just come through, which before the end of the show I'll run through with you today. But it now does look as if the Indonesian authorities are going to allow the interview. So the Indonesian authorities are going to allow the interview to take place, which is a very, very important step. But let me just now turn to the latest episode in the ongoing saga of the spying scandal between Australia and Indonesia. And this is, of course, Australian signals intelligence at the behest of the NSA spying on high-level trade negotiations that were taking place in Indonesia. And this has been justified by the Australian government as a matter of national security. And recently, the Indonesian Foreign Minister, Marty Natalegawa, went on camera in a state of amazement and outrage, really, saying that he thinks it's mind-boggling that the Australian government could consider that negotiations about shrimp exports would be a matter of national security, that they had to actually tap people's phones and find out what they were talking about. And, of course, it is outrageous. And of course, it's not true. It's spying for the sake of getting an advantage over your competitors. That's what it is. Of course, that's been denied. And it's been denied explicitly by John Kerry in another recent interview. But that's what it is. So the denial really is meaningless because this type of activity has no other purpose. So let me actually play to you now a report that was put together by Radio Australia. And this goes into a number of issues, and it's kind of an overview of the whole situation regarding this spying scandal.
Australia is once again having to smooth over relations with Indonesia after new revelations about our surveillance agencies spying on our northern neighbour. Indonesia's foreign minister says the latest news is mind-boggling. He's referring to the release of documents from former US National Security Agency contractor Edward Snowden, which reveal the Australian Signals Directorate monitored trade talks between the US and Indonesia in Jakarta last year and offered the information to the NSA. The Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, says Australia's intelligence agencies don't spy for commercial purposes. But at least one expert believes this latest revelation will further harm relations between the two nations. Chief Political Correspondent Sabra Lane.
We would never use information against allies.
The longer this kind of drip feed of revelations goes on, the longer that the Indonesians remain angry with us.
The Australia-Indonesia relationship was already under intense strain. Jakarta withdrew its ambassador to Canberra late last year after the revelations that Australia spied on the president, Susilo Bambang Yudhoyono, his wife and inner circle. There are other irritants too. The government's asylum seeker policy, specifically boat turnarounds, and the suspension of live cattle exports in 2011. These latest spying claims might cause more damage.
Every time Tony Abbott says that we will never act against Indonesia's interests, Indonesians will now think precisely of this case, and they will come to the conclusion that this gives the lie to that line of rhetoric.
The New York Times reports a secret document obtained by the former National Security Agency contractor Edward Snowden shows the Australian Signals Directorate spied on an American legal firm which was representing Indonesia in disputed trade talks and offered to share the information with Washington. The document was dated February 2013. It shows the Australians notified their NSA contact in Canberra that it had collected information covered by attorney-client privilege. And the leaked information shows that advice was sought from the US and clear guidance was given. The Australian agency was, apparently, able to continue to cover the talks, providing highly useful intelligence for interested US customers. The timing of the latest release, it seems, was designed for maximum impact, coinciding with the US Secretary of State John Kerry's visit to Indonesia.
It's the offering, if we're to take the Snowden report on face value, it's Australia offering that information to the United States to share that information. I think that will be seen as the unfriendly act by Indonesians, and I think by most other countries that found themselves in a similar position.
The New York Times also reports Australia's obtained 1.8 million encrypted master keys from an Indonesian mobile phone network, which are used to protect private communications, and it's claimed it's found a way to decrypt nearly all of them.
We do not use anything that we gather as part of our ordinary security and intelligence operations to the detriment of other countries. We use it for the benefit of our friends. We use it to uphold our values. We use it to protect our citizens and the citizens of other countries, and we certainly don't use it for commercial purposes.
I am concerned that in the course of 5.5 months, Tony Abbott's taken our relationship with Indonesia from hero to zero.
That's a bit rich. The alleged spying happened under the last government, and the responsibility for it now is being shouldered by the current one. But there is the question of how this is being dealt with, and if true, what are Australia's spy agencies doing conducting what appears to be industrial espionage for another nation? 7:30 sought a response from the Australian Signals Directorate. It issued a statement saying, as a matter of principle, the government doesn't comment on intelligence matters. However, it says, like every other nation around the world, Australia gathers information to support its national interests and that strong legal arrangements are in place to ensure that agencies adhere strictly to their legal obligations. And it adds, Australian intelligence agencies' engagement with their international counterparts is undertaken in strict accordance with the law. The former...
OK, I'll just leave it there. That report certainly highlights the fact that the arrogance of our government has never been greater, and the provocative nature of what we are currently doing, and I've covered this on previous shows with our quite... inhumane and some might say myopic attitude towards refugees. This combined with the spying on our nearest neighbours has resulted in the relations between Australia and Indonesia reaching the lowest ebb I think they have ever reached. And it really is a bad omen for the future, folks. We don't know what's coming. We don't know what's around the corner. We don't know what vast changes in the domino and the chess pieces of geopolitics are going to occur in the next couple of decades. And for us to put ourselves on such bad terms with Indonesia is just unbelievable dereliction of duty. It's a really, really serious situation. Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's a great pleasure to have your company today. And may I encourage you to check us out on our website at truthnews.com.au and have a look at all of our content on there. We've got articles and podcasts going back several years. We've done some really outstanding interviews, if I do say so myself, in the last 6 months. And we've got some great interviews coming up soon. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we do have Professor Bob Carter coming on next week to explode once again a lot of the myths about climate change. Professor Carter is an expert in paleoclimate. He's actually a geologist, but one of his expert areas is the study of climate over millions of years. And he is one of the most highly qualified people to talk about the history of climate on this planet. To the great shame of our media and our government, his opinion is virtually never sought in any important debates on this topic, simply because he doesn't toe the line of green politics as laid down by UN agreements such as the Kyoto Agreement or the Agenda, the infamous Agenda 21 UN documents. However, that's for next week. Let us just return now again to the Schapelle Corby case, because another story has popped up which I think further highlights my, further substantiates, you might say, my hypothesis that the Indonesians are deliberately allowing Schapelle Corby back into the public arena because it is actually ammunition for them, because they know that simply by being in the public arena and being able to speak to the media, she is going to do a lot of damage on a PR level to Australia's credibility. Now, we've got a new story from February, dated February 20. That's actually tomorrow's date. It's probably just come out on the presses today, but you're listening to this live broadcast. If you're listening live, you're listening, of course, on the 19th. Anyway, this article has just come out. Schapelle Corby's brother-in-law meets parole officers to strike a deal over Seven interview. Schapelle Corby's brother-in-law has met with Indonesian authorities in a bid to strike a deal and allow for a paid interview between the convicted drug smuggler and Channel 7 to go ahead. Sunday Night journalist Mike Willacy on Wednesday said that Wayan Widiata was due to meet with Ms. Corby's parole officers on Wednesday morning in a bid to end the impasse. Willis, he said, Seven was prepared to let the officers sit in on the interview if that is what it would take to make it happen. "We don't know what to expect," Willis, he said. "We're dealing with a bureaucracy now, and you can't rely on quick answers." And he said that Ms. Corby was good to go. Now, the feedback here that we are getting is that the Indonesian authorities are certainly considering this. They haven't ruled it out, and they also haven't ruled out that Schapelle might be doing a paid interview. Now, of course, this flies in the face of the ridiculous raids that took place yesterday in Sydney, with up to 30 federal police practically bashing down the doors of the Channel 7 studios in Sydney and just coming in without warrants, and in fact using all kinds of deceptive tactics, as it's now emerged, to gain access to the building, even though they actually didn't have the correct warrants. And all under the pretext of this alleged proceeds of crime investigation, when in fact Channel 7 has been very adamant that that they've already responded to any requests for documents or information from the police. So there is no prima facie case here for anything illegal having already occurred. What it looks like, intimidation. It looks like also possibly the police were trying to find any information which may incriminate either the federal police, the New South Wales police, or high-level members of government. That's what it looks like to me. I may be completely wrong. Maybe I'm off on a tangent here. Maybe I'm crazy. But it certainly looks that way. And now we see the Indonesian authorities contemplating allowing Chappelle to do a paid interview with Channel 7. So again, this highlights the fallout between Australia and Indonesia. With this woman, this civilian, this person who's really just an innocent bystander, somehow the meat in the sandwich, as she has been for the last 9 years, somehow she is like the collateral in this giant unfolding debacle between Indonesia and Australia. And, you know, there have been different phases of this debacle, and it goes back to even before Chappelle was arrested. The difficulties in the relationship between Indonesia and Australia got really bad over, well, it started with the liberation of East Timor, and there's been a lot of good research, and there's a great little documentary on that by a guy by the name of Glenn Clancy, who's been on the show, called Fool Me Twice, which shows a lot of the underhanded tactics that the Australian government used in the lead up to the liberation of East Timor. And then, of course, the Bali bombings, which were taken over, the criminal investigation of which was taken over by the Australian Federal Police in a way that the Indonesians found extremely offensive, because the Australian Federal Police marched in and basically took over the crime scene. And then from the moment they appeared on the scene, all of the main talking points about what had occurred and who the what type of explosives were used and all these things, it all changed. It all suddenly morphed into a scenario which then pointed the finger at these homegrown terrorists. And of course, that's a whole other story, and we probably need to get back onto that topic again on this show, because it's been a while since we've talked about it. But the Indonesian people, the Indonesian media, never really bought into the vilification of these people, the fanatics who did actually take credit for the horrendous Bali bombings. And part of the reason why the Indonesians didn't buy into it is that it was widely believed in Indonesia that those guys were essentially patsies. And this is what the former president of Indonesia had said, is that those bombers were basically patsies, that there were two bombs, and that the one that they were involved in detonating was the little bomb, which didn't actually kill anyone. And about 30 seconds after that bomb went off, the bomb on the other side of the road went off, which killed dozens of people. Now, the perpetrators admitted their guilt, but it's been widely believed by anyone who's looked into this, and not just believed, but on the basis of solid research, that there were foreign intelligence involved in that, and the most obvious culprit being the CIA and its affiliate organisations. Now, the reason I refer to all that is that there is this history of this tense diplomatic relationship with Australia. Chappelle Corby was arrested in October of 2004, and many of us have perceived her incarceration in Indonesia almost in the sense that she was a hostage, in a sense that the Indonesians had Chappelle to demonstrate that they actually had power over us. And we were not willing to admit, like our government was not willing to admit the real case here. I think the Australian government was possibly quietly hoping that the Indonesians would release Chappelle. They didn't, because she was convicted on the prima facie evidence that she had the drugs in her bag. And I think the Indonesians have been for a long time holding on to her and expecting, waiting for this information to reach the surface about the corruption within Australia. I think they want that to happen. I think they're going to allow the interview to take place. As to what actually is said during that interview, I will not hazard any guesses. It is quite likely that Chappelle will say nothing of any substance whatsoever. However, the mere fact that she does the interview and continues to refrain from admitting guilt, which she has all this time, if she continues to refrain from admitting guilt, she doesn't even have to say, I'm innocent. If she refrains from admitting guilt and does the interview, that is enough to catapult this again and put the pressure on to expose the real facts and the real corruption and the real crimes. That's our show for this week. We will be back next week with a fantastic interview with Professor Bob Carter on climate change. Stay tuned for that. And stay tuned for hour two. If you're listening to the live show, we'll be doing a replay of a recent show. So don't go away.